City Council meeting, regular City Council meeting, October 27, 2014.
Order this regular City Council meeting on October 27, 2014. I've asked Ken Johnson to lead us in a short prayer and John Wallace to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So would you all please rise?
Father God, we thank you for this wonderful day that you have given us today. We ask that you continue with this wonderful fall weather. I also thank you for the blessings that you have bestowed upon this city, and that you may be with us tonight during our decision making and help us make the wise decision to further benefit the city. And for this, we pray in your name. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Item 1.3 on our agenda is roll call. With us tonight is the full council and mayor. So I'll move on to item 1.4 on our agenda, citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to offer words of advice or would like to approach the City Council to have their grievances redressed or any comments or suggestions you'd like to give the council tonight? Please raise your hand. Okay, hearing none. We'll move on to item 2, the approval of our agenda. It's time to entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 3, consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda for tonight.
I'll make that motion.
We'll second.
Motion has been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to item 4.1, our current business. Tonight, we have the great honor and privilege to have with us John and Claire Lackey. And I would ask if you would please rise and come forward. It is not only with great honor that I call them forward, it is also with great sadness. But tonight is about honor. It is with great honor to recognize the Lackeys tonight for their service to the City of Othello, to the volunteer community, to the general overall well-being of this city. You guys have served since you came to Othello in 2001 faithfully. You've become many of our of the people in this audience our friends. You've been there for this community at a time when great and tremendous sadness reaches them, and you've been a comfort and you've been a help, and we are truly blessed to have had you come and live in our city, contribute in our city, and be wonderful citizens to the City of Othello. So I want to read some of the accomplishments that they were involved in. Here's a list of the volunteer capacities and a list that they've been in. They taught in the community schools classes. They volunteered for the old hotel art gallery. They were members of the Othello Centennial Committee when we were doing that celebration. They were volunteers and president of the Othello Senior Center. The Othello Rotary Club, John served as president. They've been members of the Chamber of Commerce, I think, since you've been here. Claire was an active member of the Othello Planning Commission from 2007 until currently, which we're going to have to replace you, your position now on Planning Commission. You are faithful members to the Sandhill Crane Festival. The Othello Beautification Committee is very proud to have called you members of that group. And the Knights of Columbus. And so tonight, as the mayor of this city, I want to honor you with a special recognition plaque. It says, "Presented for above and beyond to John and Claire Lackey in appreciation for your generous service and dedication to Othello from the city of Othello." Please accept this as a token of our appreciation. And we're not finished. And we still have more gifts. I'd like to present you with the key to the city of Othello, both of you. And with that, if you would like to say a few words, please take your time. That was always the question. When are they opening it with these keys? They're actually keys to your heart.
It has been our honor and privilege to be a part of the school, the community. We came here, and my favorite story is I came here to 7th floor, and it was cold, it was great, it was ugly, and I called Claire and Yakima and said, "Don't sell coffee, I'll stay." And that was 13 years ago, and we have grown to love the people, love the community. Being involved has always been our way of life, and this community has opened its arms to anything that someone could do. Lynette knows that, for all that she's done. Soda, for everything that she's done, all of you that have been a part of this know that this community is someplace that you can be a part of in all aspects. And it's been our honor. And it's been wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Really,
Claire?
All I can remember is one of Thomas's friends coming to the house with her little boy saying, "You're going to sell our house? You're not going to be living in our house anymore?" The whole time the kids were in high school, I don't think our door was locked unless we were out of town. All those children were welcome if they didn't have anywhere else to go.
I just want to say with great appreciation how much it's been fun to work with both of you. I remember seeing you at the Rotary Breakfast every year on the 4th of July. I remember seeing you at
Baseview.
Huh? Oh, they weren't? Okay. Oh, good. We won't blame you then. Seeing you at these beautification fundraisers, that was really a fun time. And you provided most of the wine for that event. And I would just honestly, when the community loses people like this, there's a big void left. And someday, I hope you've inspired some people to step up and do that. And I'm just talking about the civic accomplishments. There's also those accomplishments you guys did in helping families heal who lost somebody. And that can never be repaid. So I just want to thank them, and I'd like to honor them with a round of applause. John and Claire, thank you again. This time we'll move on to 4.2 on our agenda, public hearing on the CBHA annexation. This public hearing is now opened at 7.09 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the petition to annex filed by Columbia Basin Health Association. This public hearing is required by state law, and I will now ask Daryl Piercy to and the requester to present their staff report.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Daryl Piercy, city planner. This is an item that is before you for consideration that you may recall you also had before you for consideration several months ago. At that time, it was a different party that was before the council petitioning for annexation. Since that time, the property has been sold, and the new owners, which is Columbia Basin Health Association, is now seeking, through a petition request, annexation of the property into the city of Othello. The property, as you may recall, is approximately 20-acre piece that's located off of 14th Street, directly south of the new elementary school, on the intersection of 14th and Scootney. This property is currently in the county. What the applicant is requesting is that it be annexed into the city and be annexed with a zoning of C1, which is a commercial zone. Now, you may recall the last time that we went through this process, we had the discussion in regards to the location of a commercial zone directly adjacent to an elementary school. And there was certainly some discussion and some concern as to whether or not commercial zoning was an appropriate zone for that location. What CBHA is proposing is that the property be zoned commercial for the purpose of developing their healthcare campus at that location. They're also willing to enter into an annexation agreement that, in the event, the health of campus would not be developed, and CBHA would subsequently sell the property, the zoning would revert back to residential, which would be then an appropriate use for that site, considering the potential uses that could occur in the commercial zone. That would provide some level of assurance that the use adjacent to that elementary school would be one that's compatible. So what we would be bringing back to you, should you decide to move forward with this annexation, is an ordinance which would annex the property, as well as a annexation agreement that would be tied to that ordinance that would restrict the use to the health campus, and then in the event that that did not develop, it would revert back to residential zoning. So we believe that this is part of a long-range progression of planning for the 14th Street corridor, that this fits with the intent of the comprehensive plan, as well as the development patterns that are taking place within that vicinity, and would recommend approval of this annexation request. If there's any questions from the council, I'd be happy to entertain those. We do have representatives here from CBHA if there are any questions for the applicant as well.
Council? Do you have any questions for Darrell?
I just got one, but I think I'll save it further down in the...
Okay. Then at this time, I would ask if a representative, Curtis Andrews from Columbia Basin Health, would like to make a statement.
Hi, I'm Kurt Andrews, the facilities manager for CBHA. I'm here to answer any questions if I have any, but they'll cover most of it.
So this new campus, could you kind of give us an idea of what is planned on the site?
We haven't hired anybody to help us with the long-term planning yet. Once we have the property, we get it into the city, we are looking at engaging a consultant to help us do some long-term planning. But right now, we have no concrete plans on what and how and the schedule of when to build it there.
Okay.
We just know we need to expand.
Okay.
Maybe my question would be more towards you, Kurt. But we do have a medical district zone. Was that considered at all, or something that would work out better?
It was. We looked at property across from the hospital, across the canal. We couldn't acquire that from the farmer.
But did you consider a medical district zone for your property?
Or to ask it to be zoned?
Yes, instead of C1?
We could have, however, the campus concept is more broad to cover more than just, we're going to have educational programs there, we're going to have a conference room, a quite large conference room, and those don't really fit with the pure medical concept.
So you do have a plan, you just don't want to discuss it.
We have a need to expand our facilities for training and for meeting space.
Okay.
And so it's next to the highway. So we expect on one side it's going to be a commercial look to it with the meeting area, and the other side more residential for housing and whatnot for providers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you've already explained the plan that you have. You just have not formalized one?
We don't have any drawings. We just have a need for this kind of mixed use.
But you're giving us an idea of what your expectation is of the land that you're wanting to annex into the city right now.
Yes.
Okay.
It is a campus concept of mixing together different uses into a healthcare campus.
Okay. So you said there will be some residential housing on the campus for providers that come in for short periods of time?
For the training, for the training purposes, we have them stay between 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
We need to have housing for those doctors.
Okay. So that's like through your PA program and...
Correct.
Okay. Good. Now you're looking at, would that be a location for the administration buildings and offices?
We haven't. Our need now is for the training. We haven't got to the...
Yeah.
How we would move or how we'd phase in the existing clinic.
Okay. But you're looking for a large area to house a meeting place for when you hold your meetings and stuff through, for your staff and so on?
That's secondary. It's more of a central area in Eastern Washington to bring medical providers together for training.
Okay.
Counsel? Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you.
At this time, I will now ask for public testimony, questions, or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please come to the microphone, state your name and address for the record. I will allow up to 5 minutes for each citizen. Is there any public testimony that anyone would like to give tonight with regard to this annexation? Okay. Since there were no public comments, I'll close the time for public testimony. And are there any questions that staff would like to, or council would like to pose in addition to what's already been asked? Any further comments that staff members want to make with regard to this annexation?
Mayor, if I may, I might just follow up with the question in regards to the development of the site. Just a reminder that any development of that site upon annexation would be subject to either site plan review and certainly a platting process for that. So we would have the opportunity to go through a full CEPA review. We'd have an opportunity to go through an additional public hearing on the platting of that site, and we'd be able to look at and analyze all of the details of any development that would be proposed as part of that process. So there will be additional public opportunities to look at the plan, to make a determination as to whether or not any development on the site is consistent with the requirements of the city of Othello, and to ensure that adequate services such as roads, sewer, and water would all be available for the site. So all of those issues in terms of development plans will be addressed at a later date through a public hearing process.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Council, any further questions? Hearing none, I'll close this public hearing at 7:18. And at this time, I would entertain a motion to instruct staff to prepare documents for this annexation process.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 4.3 on our agenda is the Othello Beautification Committee request, and we are honored to have the presence of Lynette Carruthers with us tonight, and she has a request of the Othello City Council. Lynette?
My name is Lynette Carruthers. I live at 830 South Skylark Way. Good evening, Mayor Logan and council members.
Good evening.
Guys, the holidays are rapidly approaching, and we need holiday lighting on the 6 lights out on our prototype block. The beautification committee has looked long and hard to find a light that is appropriate for our main street, and we've rejected many, many, many lights. And the reason being, we have a situation on our main street that isn't going to go away anytime soon. And Ken Johnson pointed this out to me. And that is, we have delivery semis that use our parking lane on both sides of the street all week long, 24/7. And we may only have two on Main during the week, but that is enough to take out any light we could possibly think of installing there. So the light we have come up with hopefully meets the criteria for not being wiped out by truck traffic. So what you have here is a shooting star ornament. This shooting star will come out and over the street. It will extend out about 5 feet from the pole. And this ornament is 7 feet in length. It's 5 feet to the point of the star away from the pole. And what we plan to do, go ahead, Spencer. What we plan to do is mount it as high on the pole as we possibly can. And what that will give us under the star will have approximately 15 feet clearance. And from what I understand, that should get us under or above all the semis that could possibly park on Main Street. And the curls that come down the pole, they are also inside the curb and should be out of harm's way. This light pole, or this ornament, is 19 pounds. It costs $338 per fixture. And the beautification committee will be paying for the lights. We had a generous donation from the Lions Club, and that will more than cover the 6 lights that we plan to put on our first prototype block. So, Council, we need your permission to move forward with ordering Christmas lights for our new block. And these are the lights that, as the project moves on down the street, the lights will be up for the holidays, this particular light. Are there questions, concerns?
So you'll be taking the triangular flags down during the holiday season?
Excuse me?
You'll be taking the triangular flags down during the holiday season?
Yes. And I didn't mention, but Avista has agreed to take down the existing banners and put up our light fixtures, our ornaments.
And I think what you're looking for from council tonight is permission to hang these decoration lights from the flag poles, since the 6 poles were turned over to the city. So it's sensitive city property now.
Yes, exactly, Tim. Okay. Ken, since they are on city property, we wanted your permission to move forward.
Okay.
Council, need approval.
I will make that motion.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Lynette, you have your lights.
Thanks, guys. They'll be ordered in a couple of days.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate your effort. Item 4.4 on our agenda, Gray and Osborne, existing pedestrian facility and curb ramp inventory. We have a presentation tonight from the city engineer, Larry Julius. Larry?
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Recently, staff requested that Gray and Osborne complete a pedestrian facilities and curb ramp inventory of existing curb ramps throughout the community, and that included sidewalks, driveway entrances, and alley approaches. Our presentation this evening is a summary of the letter report that we sent to the city. And Mike Miskimmon of our office here was the primary author on it, and I'll turn the presentation over to him.
Okay, very good. Michael?
Good evening. Also, a few other folks from our office helped, and we brought those individuals with us here tonight. We also have Jamin Akme and Tim DeVries, who you guys might have seen sweating out on your streets this summer, actually completing the field work associated with most of this assessment. So, okay, so just we'll try not to take up too much time here. Just briefly, as Larry mentioned, earlier this year, you had asked us to complete an assessment of all of your pedestrian facilities to determine whether or not they were compliant with the ADA rules and regulations that are currently in place. We did that. We completed them and checked facilities to make sure that they were in accordance with WSDOT's Field Guide for Accessible Public Rights-of-Way, the 2012 edition, which is actually based on the 2005 public right-of-way ADA guidelines. And in essence, what we've completed here is the first part of an ADA transition plan, which is ADA requires for cities with 50 or more employees. Othello is not quite to that threshold, so we have started the part of that plan that you can move forward with. There are four parts to those plans. There's a self-assessment, there's identification of the improvements that are needed, and a plan to move forward, and then the fourth part of that is designation of a agency official who is responsible for moving ahead with those improvements. This would be essentially part one. So what did we do? We went out and physically measured up all of your pedestrian facilities. We looked for all kinds of different criteria for sidewalks, driveways, and curb ramps. You can see what they are. What is important is that there are some hard numbers that are associated with each one of those different measurements. The things that we did is we checked the numbers for strict compliance with the ADA guidelines. There are some things that are a little less obvious that we did not check for. For example, ADA states that facilities can be constructed to the maximum extent feasible in the field. So, for example, a lot of those criteria are based on slopes for ramps, and if you're building a ramp on an existing inclined slope, it's difficult to meet the requirements of ADA strictly. So they allow you to build it to the maximum extent feasible. In a situation like that, it's very difficult to make that assessment without almost a full survey and design of that particular facility. So because of the time associated with that, we did not check for that. In general, what would happen is the ramp would have been determined to be deficient, but there may be ways to say that it is actually acceptable if it was constructed to the maximum extent feasible. Another thing that we did not have any way to check would be the year of construction of the facilities. Is ADA is a somewhat evolving regulation. The facilities may have been constructed at a certain time when they were considered acceptable, and that's okay. However, they may more than likely would not be considered to be compliant today. So that a lot of ramps probably were constructed that were okay that are not okay now, and that's probably what shows up in these results. Some other rather lengthy text here. Basically what this says, bullet number one says, is that any new facilities that you construct need to be constructed to be compliant with ADA. Any projects that you construct that are rehabilitation projects should upgrade existing facilities to be compliant with ADA. And then lastly, again, the part about the maximum extent feasible, that it is not always possible to strictly meet the letter of the law, so you are allowed to construct facilities that are compliant to the maximum extent feasible in a particular case. This is just a map of your existing sidewalk and pedestrian facilities. You've got about 28 miles. These are the areas that we checked. You really have nothing south of the highway or to the far north in the city. So. As we went out, we also managed to take, in addition to collecting the data, we took photographs of all of the locations, curb ramps, and driveways that are in your city. This is just a graphic representation of what those photographs are. Those are also available. They're not included in this report, but if you'd like to see any of those, we can get them to you. This is just a sample of how we collected the data. As you can imagine, there were a number of different points that we looked at with 28 miles. We entered all of this data into a rather large spreadsheet, dependent on the particular facility type, which was kind of over in this row, and measured, you can't really read it on this particular slide, but measured the various slopes and distances and other criteria that were required. If the criteria was out of compliance, it shows up as a yellow highlighted row or column there, so you can see on this particular, this is just a sample of the data, but that's what it looks like. That is available in this report in a spreadsheet format. You can sort that and go through that in any way that you like. In a summary of the results, of the 28 miles, we recorded about 1,800 different areas. About 70 of those were actually just curb ramps that were okay. The large majority of curb ramps were not compliant with current ADA standards. You can see that there's different types of curb ramps there. Roughly 94% of one type was not compliant, 62% of the others. And a number of driveways that are not compliant also, if they were within a sidewalk. So we did note a few different horizontal and vertical discontinuities too there. So where are you now? As I was mentioning, there's three parts to the transition plans, which you are not required to completely go through and complete one of those at this time. But if you do choose that you want to continue to do that, you've done step number one, which is the self-identification of all of your problem areas. And from here, you can move on to determining the improvements and costs associated with the different improvements at each location. And then you can, of course, plan and determine what when you'd like to implement those different improvements. Just another slide on that. Things that you should do would be to develop a plan or schedule for some different upgrades. Of course, plans or projects can be completed as part of other projects that are ongoing. For example, your 14th Street project and 1st Street project that are funded will include upgrading any existing facilities and adding new facilities that will be ADA compliant as part of those projects. Or if you'd like, you can also choose to plan to complete ADA compliant upgrades, you know, on their own, obviously. So just as a note here, though, as far as rehab projects go, there is a delineation that ADA recognizes, or that the Department of Justice that administers that recognizes. Maintenance projects are not required to complete ADA upgrades as you do those. And maintenance projects are defined as these items that are listed here, which are basically striping, crack sealing, lesser repairs of different items. What is not considered maintenance is something like an asphalt overlay. That is considered an improvement and needs to upgrade the ADA facilities that are associated with that. So, or sidewalk replacement, for example, also. So, within reason. So, that's kind of the basics of what we found. If you have any questions, we'd like to try and answer.
I do, Michael. What do you see in other cities with regard to what they're doing to bring their community and their facilities to this ADA compliance? And I mean, how proactive are they? What do they tend to do? Is there funding options that we might qualify for any type of grant funding? Is there, you know, that's kind of the nature of what I'm asking?
Well, I can say that I don't know of any cities that are your size that have completed a transition plan. Most of the cities that have gone through and done this type of assessment are larger. City of Bellevue, for example, in the state has, and they found that they have a tremendous need to upgrade their pedestrian facilities, much like you do. You have, you know, something like 1,700 different locations that are deficient according to the current ADA regulations. And in Bellevue, in a larger city, and I believe Yakima is actually completing one of these assessments right now. Bellevue has worked out a plan for this, but their total need was something like just under $1 billion with a B. So they recognize that they can't complete all of those improvements immediately. So it's a very long-term plan to upgrade all of their facilities. So largely cities your size have been mostly planning to complete these improvements as part of other projects that are ongoing. If they get a side, if they are able to get funding for a sidewalk project through, say, TIB or through federal funding, they will upgrade those facilities as they have the opportunity. There isn't a lot of funding straight away just for ADA compliance, but as part of other projects, there is funding that you can pursue. So, does that answer all of the?
Pretty much, yes. Thank you.
I've got a couple of questions. I got you. Did you find many deficiencies in the construction that we have did in the past few years? Or was it pretty much we brought it up to compliance when we did that?
Well, it was largely compliant. I think, again, that the maximum, we didn't look at things to determine whether or not they were constructed to the maximum extent feasible, and that might be the kicker for a few that were not compliant on those on the newer construction projects. Is that generally consistent with what you guys recall? They were let's say they were much more compliant than or had a higher compliance rate than anything other than the newer projects. And I think part of that is because the ADA regulations have changed so frequently. It's, you know, certainly anything that was constructed any time ago is not compliant with what is expected now. So,
council. Okay.
Yeah.
Wade, go ahead.
Let me add one thing. I know Larry, we had discussed last week, and I asked you to make up a slide presentation about the more egregious projects, and we didn't bring that with, but I could perhaps put that to council at the workshop. But there were, how many, Larry, were, did we figure were egregious, and what was the approximate cost, we thought?
There were about 27. We broke into two tiers.
There were approximately 27 that we broke into two tiers as far as egregiousness of efficiency or deficiency. There were 19 on the first list and an additional seven.
Eight,
thank you. Start counting here. On the second list, and we do have a copy of that list here with us with some photographs. Largest deficiencies. One of them is a PowerPoint, one's PDF. I think I broke it. Sorry. Examples of ramps that don't have the proper slope on them, or don't have the truncated domes, or there's toe stubbers. Here's one where the catch basin lid is right in the way of where the wheelchair would be. Cracks that, you know, or sloping that in some areas you've got a decent slope on your sidewalk, but then all of a sudden you've got.
On this one, you see it shows that there's a 15.3% cross slope running across the sidewalk here in this spot. So if you were coming along this section, you would tend to want to be forced back out into the street there.
An approach that the slope is much greater than what is allowed by ADA, both federal and state requirements. But again, this may be one where, in matching the existing elevation behind the concrete, we really couldn't raise up, or when this was installed, you couldn't raise up the back of the sidewalk and driveway approach here, or else you'd have a spot where you'd be driving over a bump, or it'd be a toe stubber. So this is an example of where maximum extent feasible would come into play, where granted you're at a greater slope along, or possibly horizontal, vertical with the approach, but you just can't do anything else because of the elevation you're matching into.
This is an example of a driveway where the curb cut doesn't meet standards. The slope is much greater, at 16% running slope. Same with this approach here, 18.5% slope, and the max there is what, 8%? 8.3?
Running slope is 8.3.
Yeah.
Maximum cross slope should be no more than 2%. That particular one here is in front of the licensing department, which the transition planning rules generally state that if you've got a facility that serves another public facility, that it's, you know, should be prioritized from there.
Again, an example of cross slope, 22.6% running slope.
And this driveway here actually was an old cut that you can see it doesn't really serve anything now. You've got fences and some island bags or something. That's really what this is a driveway that was cut in there that's no longer used that you could get rid of probably actually relatively easily and eliminate that as being hazard.
And more examples of areas where we have slopes that are in much greater than allowed.
This one is not too bad on the back side. It's only 3.8% cross slope, but the running slope heading down and up out of that driveway is too steep. It's 20%. So. This one's sort of the same thing. The cross slope is not bad at all, but the running slope is 24%. Then you can see obviously it has some areas there that where your concrete or surface thing is totally broken apart, which creates some tripping hazards.
And this is a good example of tripping hazards in both photographs.
This particular area, there is no curb ramp, and the clearance around that fire hydrant and the vertical obstruction would be a problem. So. It's got multiple.
And the pool.
This area right here has a pretty tremendous cross slope. It's about a 10% cross slope. But they're serving some facility there. So, just a 1.25-inch vertical discontinuity is pretty easy to trip on that. Also, you can just see that the sidewalk here is sunk right there, basically. Real difficult fix to probably repair that one. You don't have a lot of those vertical discontinuities. You have some that are over the threshold, which is between a quarter and a half inch. And some of them are easier to fix than others. And that's kind of the case with all of these deficiencies. Some are definitely more costly fixes. You might have to go back quite a ways to repair them completely. And in other areas, it might be relatively cheap. You may not have to do much. And these were the worst of the worst.
A new sidewalk ramp with the proper slopes can run, construction-wise, anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 as a public works project. All of these together, if you look at them, if you did a number of them at one time, there'd be a savings because of the sheer volume of quantities. Here's an example where there's no ramp. And we went through that rapidly, but if at any time, if there's any members of council or anyone from the public in attendance tonight or not, that's interested in going through the report in much more detail, we'd be happy to come up and go through that. Just let Wade know, and be happy to walk you through it.
Thank you. Council?
If I may, I'd also like to point out that one of the young men with us here, Tim DeVries, is a new hire, and this is his very first council meeting ever.
Hello, Tim. Welcome to Othello.
Just had to throw that in.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Any discussion, Council? Okay. Moving on to item 4.5 on our agenda, well number 3 update. We had last week we had an emergency session, and Dan Quick
is here with us tonight to give us an update as promised.
Hi, I'm Dan Quick with the City of Othello. We, on the last week when you approved the emergency pool, I contacted Snyder Well Drilling, and they showed up today and started to disassemble the well, and we'll be on site tomorrow, and we'll be pulling it out. So really fast response there. Just worked out in our favor this time.
Excellent. Council? Good? Okay. Thank you, Dan. Next item on our agenda, 4.6, Fraternal Order of Police Contract Approval. Chief Phil Shank is here to tell us about this new contract that was negotiated.
Mayor and Council, thank you. What you have before you is the collective bargaining agreement between the city and the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the bargaining unit that represents our line police officers. The sergeants are Teamsters, as are, I believe, the support staff. So this is primarily the police officers. It does have a budgetary effect, and you'll hear about that, I think, as we present the budget. We're still kind of determining what some of those are, and we'll see more of that as we go. The salary increases that are in this are comparable to, bring us comparable to a lot of similar cities. We did propose a restructuring of the salaries, which is a 5% step between, where they did kind of vary generally around 3% between steps, so this actually increases that, so the officers can actually earn more quite a bit quicker. One of the key things in this is it allows us to change the scheduling that we're using now. So with a signature of the city administrator and the union steward, we'll be able to implement some better schedules that'll be more appropriate to the police work we do. Eight-hour schedules are pretty inefficient for what we do, so you'll be seeing some new schedules implemented, or a new schedule implemented as quickly as we can. And one of the other things that actually stands out in this is we're offering a $200 clothing allowance, and that's for the officers to buy their own footwear, and it's actually a taxable benefit, so we just roll it into their pay. So with that, I'm open to questions, but we're asking for approval.
Council?
So that's how you dealt with the uniform issue? Give them $200 and that's it?
No, that's not. That's only
It's being handled in-house,
it's
not
the beginning,
in contract.
Yeah, that's correct. In-house.
All right, good.
Contract, yes.
So they sounded like that was just for the shoes, correct?
That's just for the boots, yes.
And that's going to go to the management.
The uniform itself will go to the committee that Phil already formed over a month ago that they're looking at right now.
We have been working on uniforms, as we've also been working on equipment and schedules. We've got several work teams working on these issues, which I found to be very important issues within the department. Uniforms are a pretty significant issue. So the group has put together some recommendations. We're actually going to outfit one officer very, very in the near future and parade him in front of you to see if that's something that we can agree to. And with that, but also one of the items that we have as a red zone item to discuss in a little bit is actually some uniform clothing increase or cost increases so that we can accomplish that or begin accomplishing that.
I will just add that thanks to Chief Shank's leadership when he got here a couple months ago, his guidance is as we got towards the end of this contract, we were able to reach an agreement with the union on this, and again, a lot of it, I give credit to Chief Shank as he came in and gave us some pretty good knowledge on what we needed to do to finish this up, so a lot of hard work, and it's been about a 10-month process or more, and hopefully we're getting it to a conclusion now.
So, Council, you've had an opportunity to look at the agreement, and the chief is recommending that we approve this new collective bargaining agreement with our line officers. Is there any question that the council might
have the chief, Spencer or Wade. Is there any discussion you guys want to have? It's been a long process.
Yeah, no, it looks really good compared to what we started with. Tremendously cut down and defined. Looks really good, in my opinion.
Anyone else care to comment? With that, I would entertain a motion to approve our collective bargaining agreement with the Fraternal Order of the Police.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Item 4.7, City Attorney Services. Wade.
Mayor, Council, we've done some research on the City Attorney Services. The mayor would like to proceed with changing the company, the firm that we use for legal services. And in looking at it, we don't have to have go through the process of going out for proposals. But what the mayor would like to do at this point was get consensus from the council to move forward with investigating changing our legal service. And that's about sad.
Yep. We're just looking for a consensus from the council.
So we're doing this as a because the attorney
looked at that.
The auditors recommended request.
Well, they not necessarily recommended, but they do recommend that we look at our services, whether it's engineering, whether it be whatever, every so often. We've been with the same firm for quite a number of years, so I would like to take a look at perhaps some different services.
So is this motion would allow you to seek alternative bids or quotes, or actually you're going to go and do it?
To go out and look and see what's out there. The mayor would like to investigate a couple of different firms.
Okay, so it's just a matter of opening up requests for qualifications and, you know, bringing in.
We don't need to, don't even need to do that.
Okay.
Don't need to do that.
No, what the process would be is I would have a couple of council members interview several firms, and then we would discuss what their qualifications are, their pricing, their services that they would provide, and then a recommendation would then be made to the council for approval of the contract. And so tonight, what I'm looking for is a consensus to proceed. Okay. Thank you, Wade. 4.8, well, number 9, change order. Larry Julius.
Thank you. At the July 28th council meeting, the council authorized the mayor and city administrator to direct the contractor, Schneider Well Services, to continue drilling operations beyond what was in the original scope of work and contract if it would increase the water production from Well 9. During the drilling operations, the city determined it was in the city's best interest to continue drilling past the 920-foot mark to a depth of approximately 1,115 feet below ground surface. As it turned out, there were 4 additional water-bearing zones in that area between 920 and 1115 that are going to contribute to the amount of water that we'll be able to pump out of the Well 9. And included in this change order is the additional drilling from the 920-foot below ground surface mark to 1,115 feet below ground surface. Additional test pumping, because of the location of where the well is, east of Highway 17, but west of the Porch Well at Bruce, we're kind of in a new area where no one has drilled a well to this depth or size before. So it was the recommendation of the hydrogeologists to pump test as much as we could just to see what would happen with the water. We had in the original bid that the contractor was to do a 24-hour constant rate test. We expanded that to about 72 hours so that we can gather more data just to see what would happen as we stressed this well to find out if indeed it was a good producer and how quick it would recover to be able to pump. And all indications are that it's going to be a good production well. We should be able to pump between 1,500 and 2,000 gallons a minute at a pretty good rate. Now, that doesn't mean pumping 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 12 months, but as time progresses and we use the well, we'll be able to see just how much we can pump out of it. But all indications are it's a good well. Water quality-wise, we're ecstatic. The fluorides are practically hardly even there, less than 1 milligram per liter. No problems with nitrates. None of the other tests that are run, chemical compounds have turned up any detectable amount of anything in the water, so looks like it's a good producer. We also had talked to the contractor while they were doing the additional drilling and testing to keep his rig on site instead of moving it off, so that if we wanted to continue drilling past that 1,115-foot mark, we wouldn't have to remobilize and have them come back and start the process again. So this change order this evening has three items in it: the additional drilling down to 1,115 feet below ground surface, the additional testing, and it turned out to be 44 and a half hours, and the time, standby time, for Schneider to have his drill rig standby in case we wanted to use it after we got done with the testing. As it turned out, we didn't need to. We felt at the 1115 mark, we were in a good position where we didn't want to go any deeper. We had a good flow of water, and we could say that's what we need just for the drilling. The total amount of the change order is $75,225. However, that's not the total amount of what the city is going to have for a cost on the project, because we underran a number of the bid items. But for the change order itself, the amount is $75,225. On the agenda memo, we listed what the original budget was: $533,000, the actual construction cost, and the difference, we're under about $59,000. Now, this does not include the liner that we're looking at now, which we're in the process of working with Schneider and GSI Water Solutions, the hydrogeologist, and Department of Ecology. We've got a request into Ecology right now to approve putting a liner in, and as soon as we have that, we'll be able to get request to Schneider to give us a cost for the actual liner. But at this time, we're requesting the approval of change order number one. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Council?
That standby fee of $15,000, was that known before making the change? Did that seem kind of high to you?
I have no basis to compare it with, John, but it was a per hour rate, if I remember correctly.
What he gave us was a lump sum for it, but it broke down to where it was less per dollar per hour than it would have been to have him leave and come back, remobilize, reset up, and then continue drilling.
So the cost benefit said it was better to leave him on site.
Yes.
And John, I think you're right. That's kind of it could be a gray area. I don't think we're being gouged. I think Schneider is a good, reputable company that sincerely wants to work with the city. As you can see how quickly they moved to get here for well three.
What was their mobilization cost to arrive on site in the original quote?
About $65,000 for Movindimo.
For Movindimo?
Yeah.
And they're picking up an additional $15,000 for standby time?
Yeah.
How long were they on standby?
For about 45 hours.
So less than 2 days?
Right.
That's all right. It's just expensive. It was, it's more than what I would expect.
I agree it is expensive. I think it's fair.
But you knew it upfront?
Yeah.
And quite honestly, we tried to limit that. That's why, remember, we came to council to allow myself and the mayor to make the decision quickly to do that. So we tried to limit that standby time as much as possible by making the decision as quickly as we could.
Yep.
And that was about as quick as we could do it until we gathered the data we needed to make that decision, so.
And I think it showed a commitment on the city's part to the contractor that they were willing to share in not only the costs, but to work with the contractor rather than against them. And I, you know, that's kind of hard to quantify, but I think it did help.
There are a number of days, more than 2 days.
Oh, yeah. What Dan said is it was actually more than 2 days. He only charged, that's a good point, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
He only charged us for the time they would have actually been on the rig, which was how much per day? About 8 hours a day. So it was more than 2 days, yeah. So it, this was not one time period, if I remember correctly. It was a couple of time periods that we had to make some decisions and look at some data, some test data.
Yes.
So it was spread out over a good bit of time.
In essence, they really didn't charge us for the decision-making process of, do we continue to drill or do we, you know, go to the next step and test pump and then find out where we're at? So I think they were fair.
You have a rough idea on this lining about?
I tried to get a price from Schneider today and was not able to get one. We're talking about 19 different areas where we'll either put in screens or perforated slots in the stainless steel itself, over the, from about 400 feet down to about a little over 1,000 feet. I honestly don't. We're working on it. We should have something hopefully within a week or so. I'd be happy to get it back to you at that time.
So are you just going to do your perforations in stainless and then do the rest of the casing in black iron?
We could do that, or we could do it all in stainless. That'll be a little more expensive.
Yeah.
But the areas that aren't slotted or screened will probably be iron. And then they'll assemble that ahead of time and then put it down into the hole. And part of that has to do with there's areas where we know we don't have water bearing zones. There's also one area where we have what the hydrogeologist calls a thief zone, where the water goes, instead of coming in, goes back out, having to do with hydrostatic pressures and all that.
Yeah.
And that's down around the 740 mark. So we definitely want to sleeve that off or case that off. And that's what we're trying to get approval from on a college unit. So that's what the regulations state, but that's what we're trying to get from them is a statement that says that's what we need to do. But we'll probably have some stainless, some screens, and some black iron.
Screens?
Yeah. In the real high-producing areas, we don't want to limit the amount of flow coming in just through slots that are perforated around the exterior of the casing pipe. Screens will allow us to get as much water as we possibly can, but it'll protect the pump and the bowl assemblies so that we don't have any possibility of rocks getting sucked into the impellers like we did in well 6.
So are you confident that we could still stay under the $533,000 mark for our engineer's estimate for the budget?
I think it's going to be a little bit more. We had estimated about $200 a foot originally, but we hadn't anticipated as many perfs preparations that we have now, which I think is going to bring the cost down a little bit because it's not going to be a complete a sleeve. I wish I had more available or more dollars available for consideration or more information available, but we just don't have it yet.
When will you have it by?
I'm hoping in a couple of weeks so we can get in there and get something back to you.
Well, you've video logged the hole. You know where the water bearing zones are.
Right.
You are going to put in a 16-inch casing, mm-hmm. okay, and you're going to do slotted intervals at those water bearing zones. So you right now you can't determine what a cost or...
We just don't have it from the contractor yet.
Is that, and Larry, that's because this is basically a custom-made deal.
Yeah.
And you haven't given us the cost of that yet, so... It's not a standard, you know, it's so much per foot. It's based on, I suppose, how much the cost of the stainless steel piece goes and how big that is. And so it's, my understanding is a variable cost. It's not a set per foot cost, unless you know something different. That's my understanding.
Okay.
We'll get it to you as soon as we can.
Well, recommendation would be, and do stainless steel for your perforations. All stainless steel, because there's a lot of iron bacteria,
yep.
and you'll scale over unless you want to budget $75,000 every 3 to 4 years to go in and actually pull the well pump and go in and swab and bale and brush the casing.
Right.
We've made that mistake. Well, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what we got to do, is budget that amount to go in and clean it every 3 to 5 years. So you want to be in stainless so it doesn't fill up. Now, for the areas that you're blanking off,
right.
black iron's fine. It stays relatively clean as long as the water's moving by it.
Right. And as soon as we do have something back from the contractor, we'll bring it to the city.
So for tonight, Larry... That would be, well, this is just the change order to authorize the payment of this work.
Yes.
The figures you're going to bring back to us is going to be change order number 2.
Right. That would be for the liner installation.
All right.
Increased cost because you got 226 feet.
Exactly.
So there's an additional liner cost.
Council, you have any further questions? Thank you, Larry.
Okay.
This time, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve change order number 1, authorizing the mayor to sign.
I'll take that motion.
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Item 4.9, ordinance to amend the OMC chapter 11.50, titled Right-of-Way Permits. Catherine.
Thank you, Mayor. At the last council meeting, the council adopted an amendment to Chapter 1150 on your right-of-way permits. And one of the things that we noticed during the discussion was that the chapter lacked a penalty provision for violations of any of the requirements in that chapter. So Council had discussed briefly the need to include a penalty clause. I have presented 2 potential draft ordinances for your consideration. One contains a simple C penalty for a violation, regardless of whether it's a first or recurring offense. The second draft provides a graduated penalty schedule in the event Council wanted to institute a graduated penalty phase per violation. It's up to the council's discretion to change it if it desires. The C penalties that I've inserted, I just inserted penalties based upon council's past action in establishing penalties with previous violations of different sections of their municipal code.
Thank you.
Catherine, what's the amount of each? C7 and C5.
The C7, if you'll recall, is the $260 penalty. In the graduated penalty section, the C5 would be $100 increased over that, and the C1 penalty right now is the highest C penalty that you've got in your schedule, which is the $1,000 maximum. And as I discussed last time, you might want to take a look at some point of at your C penalty schedule and maybe revise some of those penalty amounts. The statutory maximum for violations of municipal code is $5,000, and many cities have included the up to the maximum $5,000 penalty for the more egregious violations.
Thank you, Scott. Council, discussion?
I like the first one. Yeah, I like the progressive.
A progressive penalty?
Yeah.
For violations of our building code?
Yeah.
Or right away, excuse me?
Right away.
Mm-hmm. All right. There's a preference, a clear preference, and I entertain a motion to adopt the ordinance with the preference of the graduated progressive schedule.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
We have a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving along in our agenda, item 5, is there any unfinished business to come before the City Council? Item 6 on our agenda, new business. Is there any new business to be brought before the Council? Is there a Council have questions that they'd like staff to research for our next meeting?
One really quick for Phil. Looking over the streets earlier this week, I know we're supposed to have a no parking ordinance for trucks. This kind of helped me remind me today that we do have trucks that frequently, a lot of them out of town, they will park on the side of the street for a short period of time or even for deliveries and stuff. But at one time before Main Street construction, we did have signs up along the street that said no truck parking. And I noticed they haven't been put back up since then. Is that something we could put back up to help that problem?
That would make enforcement easier. We are taking enforcement action now. They've been parking in front of City Hall.
Yeah.
So over the last 2 weeks, we've had officers go out and contact them and I believe cite them, but not.
And a lot of these truckers, though, we get some of them that are from, they don't know the ordinances. They don't know there's no parking, supposed to be no parking on the Main Street.
Our ordinance.
There's a lot, yeah, the signs would be nice to get back on the Main Street like we did have before.
I know that there's a lot of times you drive down Main Street, like especially at lunchtime, they'll stop to go into McDonald's or something. It sure makes it hard to get out into the traffic because you cannot see around them when they're parked in that parking lane.
Right. It's inappropriate to be parking on Main Street, so just like residential areas.
Thank you, Phil. Okay. Hearing no new business, I'll move to item 7. Council will also receive department heads' September reports. And with that, I would like to adjourn this meeting and take a 10-minute recess before we head into our budget workshop.